Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening, everybody. Welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious, Lynn Nickerson. Good evening.
Yo, Willie, how you doing?
Hey, yo, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Good, good. How you doing? What's...
All right.
Oh, good.
Yeah, lovely
good.
Day. Did it pour here in Portsmouth?
I don't know, but I was coming through Exeter, and we had one hell of a storm.
Torrential.
There was torrential rain, hail, wind, big tree limbs
There was even
down.
Hail? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
really?
Hail. Some big branches knocked down.
Yeah, there were wicked clouds, but it didn't rain that hard.
No, by the time I got back to Hampton, there was nothing. So a little sprinkle.
Well.
Hey. You want to have a guest tonight?
Why don't we try doing a show? That would be a novel idea.
That's it. I knew there was something I was
We
I was,
came here
I
for
was
some
missing.
Reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Other
I
than
don't.
That darn debate that was just on TV.
I know. There was some reason we came in here. I knew that. So, hey, tonight on Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, we are very happy to welcome back to the show Nomar Slevic. Nomar is the author of the books Otherworldly Encounters, Evidence of UFO Sightings and Abductions, and UFOs Over Maine. He is the writer and producer of the documentary Abducted New England, and his latest project is the new film Otherworldly Amor. And let's see, he has other things in the works, but we're going to get to that a little bit later in the show. So right now, let's welcome to Spirit Radio, Nomar Slevic. Good evening, Nomar.
Hello, Nomar. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me back. It's good to hear your voices.
Thank you.
Thank
Likewise.
You for coming back.
Your career is taking off, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I think it's... It might be perceived a little glamorous than it really is.
Well, the thing, you are having a lot of success. You're accomplishing quite a few projects. Are you doing this full time now, or do you have another job?
I definitely have some other things that I do in order to make money, because this stuff is definitely not enough to, you know, pay rent and all that.
Yeah.
This is the fun stuff.
It's the fun stuff.
It generates some income, but certainly not enough.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a bang-up job. I really enjoyed the movie Otherworldly Amor.
Yeah, it was great. Very interesting.
It was very interesting.
I'm so glad you guys watched it and enjoyed it. It was a labor of love that took just about a year and 2 months to complete.
Truly?
It was a big undertaking.
Well, the storyline is very well done. The music is fantastic. The different movements of the music. I know that you use some friends, right, to do the musical scores?
That's right. I use my friend Brzezowski. He's a hip-hop artist, but he's also a producer, and he really came up with some ambient and...
Yeah. It's like really creepy music.
Creepy music. There's actually a subgenre of it called haunted furniture.
Oh, that's neat. Well, he does a great job with it. I really enjoyed the music. It really enhanced the visual.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I was really excited when I got his tracks, and he's actually since released it as a soundtrack, so we'll get into that in the promotion.
Oh, great.
I saw that, but he actually wrote it especially for the video, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you about the title, Nomar. Why did you use the Spanish word amor, A-M-O-R, and the two protagonist, so to speak, they're French Canadian.
A valid point, and I'm glad you actually brought it up, because I actually point out to people that it's the Spanish spelling of
Yeah.
You know, that's not lost on me. It was intentional.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to use the word amor. I used the Spanish spelling of it simply because I like the juxtaposition of the short word against the longer word.
That's legitimate enough. That's a good decision. Yeah, amour. Amour, being French with the U, would have been a longer syllable. It sounds really great. And otherworldly, too. Very appropriate, as we'll soon find out. They're an interesting couple, Josh and Shauna. So they met in January of 2018, and then they started dating, but they found that they had all of these strange connections, otherworldly connections.
Yeah, that's right. Not only did they just completely fall head over heels for each other, come to find out there's all these other spiritual and otherworldly connections that really solidified their relationship. And dare say, and the documentary alludes to it, because I can't say for sure, neither can they, but maybe it brought them together.
I've heard that before. Are you familiar with Kwani Lapsaritis? He's the Bigfoot investigator. He lives out in Oregon, I think. Yeah, West Coast. Okay. Well, it was brought to his attention that his now wife, his present wife, they met because of the Bigfoot. They pushed them together. Yeah. So I've heard of this happening before. I think it's really neat. Now,
that's interesting.
Yeah. And also, too, you know, the Bigfoots are very often associated with UFO sightings. What's really strange and unusual about Shauna and Josh is the fact that they have had so many missing time episodes. So would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. They had some missing time scenarios while together, but while they were together in a relationship, but it happened to them separately. And one time, Shauna was with one of her friends, and she went down to the Freetown Forest area. And when her and her friend were driving back, they were heading home. They had about a three and a half hour ride ahead of them, and quite soon after they had taken off to leave to go home, they had stopped and got some coffees, and then they were just about to get on the highway when this vehicle pulled out of this parking lot. And it's one of those moments when you just know you're about to get into a car accident. It's unavoidable. Nothing that you can do is going to stop what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's actually happened to me in a minor fender bender. It's a very frustrating situation. And it actually jumped them. They like braced for impact. And at the moment of impact, they experienced a flash of light. And the next thing they knew, they were about 45 minutes away from home.
Wow.
And we're talking, they were probably a half hour into a 3.5 hour drive. And after this flash of light, they were about 45 minutes home and from home. And they have no idea, no recollection on how they could have traveled that distance.
It sounds to me that they were extracted out of that situation for a much larger purpose. They were certainly being saved. What do you think?
Well, it certainly seems like it. I can't say for sure, of course, but it's odd, to say the least.
There are some strange little clips on the internet of people nearly being hit. This one guy that is on a bicycle that I remember, and it looks like the time stampings are not messed with, although they're moving very fast, but the man is suddenly transported to the other side of the street, missing impact entirely.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, that one sticks with me.
I think I've seen that one too.
Yeah, and that sounds exactly like the same thing. It makes you wonder, well, people are saved, number one, and how the heck do they do that? You know, how is it done?
Yeah.
Okay, so how about some more instances that either one of them had?
Yeah, let's see here. Josh and Shauna actually had one together. I'll tell you that one. They were out in Portland, Maine for the evening. They had gone to a show. They were with some friends, and it was they had decided to go home for the night. And they had parked in a paid parking area. And in order to get out, you have to put a ticket in, and then a little gate raises so you can drive out. Well, Shauna has the ticket. She's trying to put it in the ticket machine, and she can't get it. And
he was getting frustrated.
And Shauna, everybody's just kind of getting frustrated. And they had a bit of an excitable night. So Josh was like, honey, just get in the car and we're just going to bust through this gate. It's just a little tiny gate. You know, it's not like they were doing thousands of dollars of damage. Not the best decision. Josh will admit that. But they decided to do it anyway. And again, right at the moment of impact, they hit this gate to go through it. And the next thing that Shauna and Josh remember is they're like 10, 15 minutes away from home. They had about a 45-minute drive that night, and they hit the gate. They're in Portland, hit the gate. Next thing they knew, they're 10, 15 minutes from home.
And didn't he say he wasn't driving to begin with, right? Was he behind the wheel? He wasn't to begin with.
Actually, he was the one driving.
Okay, because he found himself driving, but very close to her house, and he said he didn't even know how to get there.
That's right.
Yeah.
When they both kind of like came to, that's what's really interesting is they kind of describe the feeling of like just kind of waking up, but maybe without the grogginess.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like kind of coming to. And Josh, this is one of the first times Josh is driving around in Maine. He's from out of state. And he doesn't know the area at all. He's either using GPS or Shauna is navigating for him. And he finds that he's 10, 15 minutes away from Shauna's house. Shauna comes to, and she's like, where the hell are we? And she's looking around. She's like, oh, wow, we're like on the road, like next to my house. This is crazy. But how did we get here? And he's like, I don't know. I'm just driving, you know? Like, he had no idea what to make of it. So they get home, and they just have no idea what could have brought them from Portland all the way to where Shauna was living at the time. And they said some things in the vehicle had been jostled about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could that have happened from the impact of the gate? I don't know. But things were kind of strewn about everywhere, and they couldn't find their cell phone.
Yeah, they
mentioned
that.
Because the night weirded them out so much, they just went inside to kind of sleep everything off and deal with it in the morning. So they get up in the morning. Josh goes out to the truck, and he finds the phones. And his phone in particular was under the driver's seat. He has no idea how it got there. And when he went and looked at the phone, he saw that there were some pictures there that he did not take. And pictures, there's some flashing lights, it looks like. And I show that picture in the documentary.
But, yeah, there,
and odd story.
There is one picture, that one that you show at 7 minutes 49 seconds, that looks like Josh is seated at the wheel, and he's got his arm on the steering wheel. The picture is taken from down below as if someone were on the floor of the passenger side, and it almost looks interdimensional to me. It almost looks like someone is fading in and fading out of dimensions.
Wow.
If you look at it again, you will see his right arm on the steering wheel, but his body is, I think he had a hat on. His body was clouding up.
90% of the time he wears one, so bright.
Yeah. And then you see all those streaks of light. So that's what I could make out of that. What a freaky picture. There has to be some sort of interdimensionality going on when they have this time travel. There's got to be.
Mm.
The missing time.
I don't know, but it's really interesting how there's always, whatever sort of story they have, there's some sort of evidence that backs it up.
Yeah.
And it's really, that's a big part of what drew me towards them, you know?
Yeah, and that is a very strange picture.
And one thing I noticed about both of those incidents, they both started from a sudden like the car pulling out and then hitting the gate. It's like that in both cases, that's what sent him into whatever happened.
Yeah, they were being extracted from his situation. Yeah. I really feel that they're being saved. And the evidence at the very end of the show kind of indicates that they are being interceded to help here. But I won't jump to conclusions yet.
Not yet.
Okay, then there was one other experience, too, I wanted to mention. When he went home after he spent a weekend with her, and he had a dream where he was working on his computer, actually. He was very much awake. Next thing you know is that he was having a dream and being drawn through a wall that appeared to be a portal.
That was strange. Wild. And to hear him tell it in person, I mean, you can see on his face, you know, that whatever he experienced, like, he believes it to be true.
He was bewildered. Like,
it's quite clear that he's not lying, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, he and Shauna were part of paranormal investigation teams, and they had gone somewhere and recorded a bunch of audio. And Josh, when he came home, he decided to lay in bed with his laptop and listen to the audio for any signs of EVPs. So it's, you know, like one in the morning, something like that. So he's getting kind of tired. And if you've ever listened to hours of white noise trying to find EVPs, it'd be a bit boring. So at such a late hour and doing something so boring, he fell asleep.
Yeah, that can put you to sleep real fast.
Yeah. So he gets kind of spooked or startled awake. And he notices that the laptop and his headphones aren't on him anymore. They're folded up neatly on the end table next to him. He fell asleep, though, while he was doing the EVP listening. So that struck him as odd at first. And while he's kind of, you know, waking up and coming to, it feels like he can see these two dark figures or shadows or something in the corner of the room. So now he's starting to, you know, get a little bit scared. He can't quite make it out, but he can just barely see that there's like a figure or shadow or something in the dark corner of the room. So while he's looking at that, out of nowhere, he says the wall that's across from him opens up. And what he's seeing, instead of that wall, is he described it as, something digital, you know, kind of like white noise, you know, on a TV screen, but a little bit more digital. And it had a bunch of different colors. And to him, it felt like maybe it was looking into another room.
Yeah.
And so he's lying there. There are these two figures in the corner of his room. He's seeing that his wall is opened up to maybe another room, another dimension. He doesn't know. And then he starts to feel like he's being pulled off of his bed, like something has grabbed his leg and is pulling him off the bed.
Scary.
He's very upset at this point. And he's yelling and screaming and telling whatever it is to let him go and to, you know, like, this isn't happening, let me go. And it all just sort of stopped.
Yeah, and then the dog stopped barking and he settled down. So something was taking place.
And so he's laying in bed, and on the ceiling above him, he starts seeing these, like, dark circles darting around, and he doesn't know what the hell to make of that. So he's just kind of trying to process everything, and he's like, oh, I got to write this down. So he grabs the laptop, opens it up, and writes everything down, and he still has, you know, what he wrote the moment after it happened.
Good.
On his laptop. So I got a chance to read that, which was really great, and it just meeting with them in general was just amazing.
Very trippy. What do you suppose those black orbs were? Because that's kind of unusual. Usually they're bright lights.
I have no idea. I mean, who knows if it was some sort of residual effect of his eyes adjusting.
It could have been,
seeing
yeah.
something, you know, so bright and weird. I don't know. The brain's never seen anything like that before. And it could have just been his eyes adjusting, or maybe it was a residual effect of whatever it was leaving his area. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to sit up and take notice, because that was quite an account. And then they had a experience at Shauna's house. They were sitting out in the yard, and they had a bonfire. And then they started seeing something in the woods.
Yeah, I was actually there for the...
Oh, you were?
It was my second day of shooting with them, and it was February. So it was really cold,
I
went down there to shoot some more video of them going over the evidence. And while we were there, Sean and Josh were like, "Oh, we should, you know, go outside, have a bonfire, do some, look at the sky to see if we could see anything, and all that good stuff." So I was like, "Well, hell yeah, let's go do that." So Josh built up this big bonfire, and we have some camping chairs sitting around it, and we're just looking at the sky and all that good stuff. And out of nowhere, Shauna sees a light in the sky, and she's looking at it for, less than a minute. And then she brings it to me and Josh's attention, and then she's like, "Oh, no, it's gone." So Josh and I look. It's not there anymore. At first, she was thinking it was maybe a satellite or something, but the fact that it disappeared maybe says otherwise. But after a while, we're sitting around the bonfire and everything. We're not seeing anything in the sky. Maybe an hour had gone by. I'm not really sure. We're sitting there, and we started hearing a voice coming from the woods. Now, where Shauna and Josh live, very rural. They do have some neighbors, but it's very spread out. The closest neighbor is maybe a football field and a half away. And the area where the bonfire was and where we heard the voice coming from is away from the street and away from the neighbor. So the closest thing out that way is maybe a mile, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of dense woods out there. And that's where we heard the voice coming from. And in our opinion, it was low. So it seemed like it was a male voice to us. That's how we described it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got the camera going, and Josh is going out and checking it out. We're all kind of standing by the tree line, seeing what we could hear. The whole time, I get the camera going, and I gave Shauna or Josh, I forget who now, has a digital still night vision camera. So they're just taking pictures with a night vision camera. And we can hear this voice, but it's just like murmuring. Like, you can tell their sentence structure, but you can't tell what's being said.
Did it sound human, Omar, to you?
In our opinion, yeah, it sounded human.
Okay.
It was so odd, though. Like, it was February.
Yeah.
And it was really cold. I mean, it had to have been 10 degrees, if that. Like, we had to be sitting right on
the bonfire.
The bonfire just to be warm.
Yeah.
So it didn't make a whole lot of sense to us that somebody would be out there. Not to mention there was snow everywhere.
Yeah,
we weren't hearing
hard to maneuver.
Crunching of boots or anything. Somebody walking.
Yeah,
it was very odd for us. But then it stopped and it went away. But it piqued our interest, so we kind of hung out there, in those areas for a little while. Didn't happen again. So we sit back down by the bonfire. And then we start hearing the voice again. So we all get up again, and we, are trying to figure out what it is. And unfortunately, the camera that I had, it's a consumer camera, so it did not pick up the audio of what we heard. But the night vision still camera picked up a couple of anomalies. I don't know what to make of them. I definitely don't claim that they're extraterrestrial or paranormal in any sense, but it is odd when you kind of put it all together. So a couple of the pictures, one of them had this weird swooping image in it, almost like it was like a wispy sort of thing. Well, you might think that makes sense since we had a bonfire and there was smoke. But where the picture was taken, the bonfire is, 50, 60 feet away. And not to mention that it was closer to the house where we took this picture. And it was near a shed. And again, the shed is closer to the house and away from the bonfire. So it didn't make sense to us that smoke, A, would travel that far,
to
the ground, and be there for us to capture it on camera.
It was kind of geometrical, too, wasn't it? Is that the image you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the wispy, smoky one. But the other image we caught was this perfect triangle, really, of light. I don't know what it was, but that was in the woods, in the direction of the voice. This image was captured, and there's a close-up of it in the documentary. And
yes.
When you zoom in on it, it's just this perfect triangle, and it looks like there's lighted points, a light at each point.
Right.
Sort of.
Did you capture that, Nomar? Or your cameraman? Or was it Josh?
It was Josh or Shauna, one of them.
Okay.
Took the picture.
Yeah, it was very intriguing.
But we didn't see anything with our eyes, and then Josh went out there the next day during the daylight in the direction of where the picture was taken to see if there was any
footprints,
sort of signage or something out there, and he didn't find anything. Very weird.
Well, at what point there was some mention, and I've listened to it, of a metallic-sounding voice.
Yeah.
Do you recall that? Where was that taken?
The metallic-sounding voice was taken during an EVP session that they were having. So Sean and Josh, again, are former paranormal investigators.
Mm-hmm.
And since they were having strange things happening around them, you know, that investigator instinct kicked in. And so they would leave cameras out and they would leave audio recorders out. And they decided to have an EVP session one night. And when they were listening back to the audio, they caught something saying the word Earth.
Yeah.
And it's a very odd sounding voice. It's almost robotic.
Yeah, it's almost human and robotic.
Yeah.
It's a combination,
yeah.
Seemingly. Yeah. Because Josh had asked the question, why are you contacting us? What is it? What is your purpose? What do you want? And it said Earth. Earth.
Yeah.
Earth.
Yeah. And a lot of the feelings that they get when they have these encounters, some of the dreams that they have imply to them that there's some sort of issue or thing going on with the world, with the Earth, you know, and we need to pay attention to it. You know, that's the sort of sentiment or feeling that they're getting from.
Yeah.
From whatever's happening, and that's pretty profound, you know? Like, what do you do with that?
Well,
other than, I don't know, try to be as good a person as possible, but...
Well, I think it's even more involved
really...
than that.
We're
right at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about what their purpose is and some of the dreams that they have. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We're talking to Nomar Slebik. Excuse me, Slebik, and his movie is Otherworldly Amour. We'll be right back.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. Willie Hassel, along with Lynn Nickerson, and our guest tonight is Noma Slevic. Welcome back, Noma.
Welcome back, Nomar.
Thank you.
So, Shauna and Josh Lejeunesse, give us an idea of some of their dreams. It seems to me, before we get into that, that they're being saved for some kind of purpose. I don't know if they're particularly insightful or sensitive, but they've certainly been chosen to be contacted. And whether it's, you know, I don't want to say it's against their will, but it's a surprise.
Yeah, it can be jarring.
It can be.
You know, you can misinterpret that as, you know, against your will, but you know, when you're open to it, which they've become,
yeah,
much more welcoming, and they also see certain signs on when something might be or have less than the best intentions. You know, they can
right.
kind of feel that, and will actually close off or maybe not interact as much as they normally would. You know,
well, I think their understanding is evolving. So, tell us about their dreams.
Yeah. Sure. Now, excuse me. Dreams specifically, I mean, they've so many of them, you know, but the general like consensus of their dreams are, first of all, it typically surrounds like having some sort of typical encounter, which is seeing a light in the sky or something like that, or maybe coming across some sort of entity or being pulled out a window or
yeah.
something like that. So it's something alluding to maybe what is actually happening to them, you know. So are they misinterpreting these dreams as maybe memories, you know? Could they mm-hmm. be memories and they're thinking that they are dreams? It's really weird. What's also interesting is when they wake up in the morning sometimes, they're like, geez, I'm exhausted. It feels like I need to go to bed again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What were we doing all night? And, you know, Josh will be like, geez, I don't know, but I feel the same way. I am drained. And then Shauna, not so much Josh, but Shauna, will wake up with marks on her.
Oh, dear.
Sometimes it's bruising, like on her thigh.
Mm-hmm.
Other times there might be little skin marks. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say scoop marks, but some sort of irritant to the skin
mm-hmm.
has occurred that wasn't there the day before. Now, most recently, because this is ongoing encounters, I understand there, you know, the documentary is there, but it doesn't tell the whole story because it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So just about 2.5-3 weeks ago, Shauna sent me a message saying, Nomar, I woke up this morning and Josh noticed something on my back. So we took some pictures. Here are the pictures. You know, what do you think of it? And what was on her back was a almost like a burn pattern, almost like a grate or like an old school manhole cover or something
yeah.
like that pattern on her back. And it was very odd. And none of their patio furniture has that design on it. To the point, the point being is that maybe like a skeptic might say, oh, she was sitting outside in the sun, you know, and
yeah.
and the pattern on the chair is how she got that sunburn or something like that, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's simply not the case.
It's not the same proportion.
There was actually no pain to it, to the touch.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, it just faded away. Very, very odd.
Yeah, truly. Well, I've got to say, I hope you're going to do a sequel about them because it is an interesting situation. I think it's developing, don't you?
Oh, it's certainly developing. And, you know, a sequel, there's a couple of ways that I have to think about going, you know, doing something like
that. Mm-hmm.
Making documentary films in general is extremely expensive. And it's not something you can just really do on a whim and just kind of do whatever you want and have everything come out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be homeless, you know. And as it stands right now, you know, I rent a room in a house. Like, you know, things aren't well, you know. So just being able to make something like this, there needs to be some finances behind it. So if this movie does well financially, I'm not saying it's got to blow up and make millions. That would be insane. But if it could at least cover what it costs to make it and then make some sort of profit that I can work with mm-hmm. to do a sequel, then that's really where it makes sense. I can't just, you know, I don't even own cameras to shoot a documentary. I would have to rent them or ask people to use their cameras in a donated sense. And all of that can be a little tricky if you don't have the finances or the right things in place. So those are some of the, despite this being a labor of love, there's some real world aspects that I do have to continue. Even though I want to know more of what's going on, you know, and I'll keep up with them personally,
good.
It might not make sense for me financially to do it. But if I can, I would be an idiot not to.
I hope the means are there. However, you do have some other people you can focus on to sort of continue this kind of saga. And there's someone here in the studio that you're very familiar with, and we want to get the inside scoop on what's going on there, because you are now in the process of writing a book concerning Mr. Mike Stevens. And his experiences.
Yeah, Mike Stevens in the studio over there.
Mike Stevens is right here.
Hey, Nomar, how's it going? Good to hear your voice, buddy.
Mike, what's up, buddy?
Not too much.
This is a surprise. So, yeah, I don't know what your audience knows of Mike Stevens, despite him being, A, just a really good guy, and B, doing a lot for the experiencer community. It all started with him and his own experiences. And it's been a lifelong journey for him.
Right.
It's a fascinating story. And it's a story that I want to tell. And with it being so long form, I don't want to cut any corners or miss anything. So I want to document what happened to him in book form. And so Mike and I, we've had a couple of conversations on the phone, but then we got together in person. Geez, when was that, Mike?
I want to say last spring. Maybe
something
it was
like
last
that.
Summer.
I don't
know.
It was kind of cold. I don't remember, but...
Oh, there were still snowbanks, so that's why I'm thinking spring, but...
Yeah, like early spring, something like that. Anyway, so we got together, and we had a really long discussion where I just sat Mike down, put a microphone in front of him, and I'm like, all right, spill your guts, you know? Tell me everything that you're
How much time have you got?
And he did, and I was completely blown away, just like I was blown away from Shauna and Josh's story, which is really important for me in wanting to dedicate a project to a story or to an individual or something like that. Like, I have to be invested in it. You know, if I was just in the job of, you know, writing general books or whatever, you know, it would be a lot different. There's no passion behind it. You know, these are stories I want to tell. And I also believe that these are stories that need to be told. It's almost like a historical record. There's not a whole lot of people, especially towns, you know, small towns aren't going around documenting all this historic paranormal evidence, you know. So people like me and tons of other researchers that I'm sure you've had on your show are doing our best to try to give a historical record of what's going on around us.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike's story definitely has to be told. And
Mike's story has the ring of authenticity. Don't you?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I believe that Mike's story has a ring of authenticity.
Oh my goodness, sure it does. And when Mike would explain these different scenarios, or I think of them as scenes, but that's just like how my brain works. But these different stories that he has, like, I like the way he tells it, because he doesn't know what the hell happened, or there's aspects of it that he doesn't understand, and he's okay with saying, oh, I don't know, because he would tell me something, and so I might have two or three or four follow-up questions, and he would be like, I don't know, or I didn't see that, or I'm not sure, or I don't know what to make of it. And that says to me that he's just like, here's what happens, believe it or not, And whatever you throw at him for a question, if he can answer it, he will. And if he can't, he'll be honest and say, I don't know. And I really admire people that do that. He's not trying to put on airs or make something up or anything like that. He's just being straight up with you, you know?
Well, let me ask Mike. I'm interested in knowing Mike. Now, hey, did you say you've seen this movie yet? No More.
Yes.
You have. Okay. Are you finding any parallels with what they've experienced and what you have?
Yeah, quite a few between the documentary. They've come up to our encounters group, and I've got to talk with them personally before. And yeah, there's a lot of parallels, not just between, you know, me and them, but on a much larger scale, too. There's a lot of commonalities
that
all
I
across
can see.
The board.
How about the missing time stuff now? Have you had experiences like that?
Only very briefly, not like hours or anything.
You were younger?
No, it was actually
even recent?
Last couple of years. It was only like 15 minutes or something. I'm pretty much a big clock watcher when I go out, but
oh,
I don't really have any missing time that I can recall.
Then comparing the two situations, yours is lifelong, and maybe Shauna and Josh's contact is lifelong too, but we don't know that. But do you think that there's like a parallel of purpose?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I have some of the same, like, world, not so much in, I don't know whether you want to call it dream state experience or what, but yeah, some of the same type worldly images of destruction. There's a purpose here. And I think most experiencers, once they get through the trauma and fear part of it, kind of get around to that, you know, understanding that there is purpose behind all this.
Yeah. What strikes me about Shauna, I'm hoping at some point, she did mention, this is relative, mentioned driving in the car with her son, they saw a red light in the sky, and she was saying, doesn't seem to be doing much, but she said she got a sickening feeling in her stomach. Now, she also had a problem one day after she had, it was the next day after she saw the light where she had extreme pain in her stomach. So I'm wondering if, you know, she has been made to forget, and they are doing something with her, but probably for a grander purpose. But I think she's going to become aware that she's been toyed with a little bit for whatever reason. And do you get the same feeling that they've interacted with you that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's with anything. You'd love to know why, and just like, you know, make it a lot simpler for everybody. Like, if you want this done, let me know that and I'll go do it. But yeah.
Yeah. I'll go operate on me. Keep your hands off. Shauna seems to be very aware, and I really wonder physically what's been going on with her. I wonder what they want to do with her. How about you, Nomar? What do you think?
Well, I definitely think that there's some sort of plan, and it also seems whatever has chosen them seems deliberate in their choice, and I don't know if that is a change in extraterrestrial activity in regards to who they are choosing, but at least with these two and someone like Mike, although, you know, Mike's has been ongoing, but Sean and Josh's has been ongoing too. Anyways, the point is that they seem real deliberate because they've picked the perfect people who, even though the encounters might be jarring at first, they're just so open to it, and they're open to try and listen and to try to interpret. And I've given them tips like, hey, if you're in the midst of an encounter, you know, just start thinking in your head, like asking questions or doing what you can, do something to try to make contact. And, you know, I think that needs a little bit more work, and they're always striving to, you know, to do what they can. But it really seems like it's a deliberate choice that it would be these two people. They're just so open to it and want to understand it. And if they can make a difference, they're up for it.
Yeah. What I found curious too is in watching this that, you know, you had the metallic voice, you also had the voice, because it sounded almost like a combination of metal and a computer. There was that sound, and then there was the sound of the voice of the guy saying Earth. But then you get the pictures, the light pictures, that almost seem nebulous, intelligent, and organic. And it makes you wonder, what is it that you're dealing with? Is it an actual physical entity, or is this just energy, or can they just appear to us in different ways because of their ability to be interdimensional?
Right, right. I have all those same questions as well.
Yeah.
Donna, Josh, and I have talked about that, and they're both of the opinion that whatever it is that they're seeing certainly is organic. Everything. I had, in trying to come up with the cover art, there were, you know, a bunch of different ways that we could have gone, and I sent them a bunch of samples, and one of them had an actual kind of like standard, you know, metal UFO in it.
Yeah.
And while it looked cool, they're like, but that's not what we're experiencing, so I don't want that to represent what's on the cover.
Did they say that?
I really appreciated that, you know, because they want to come across as everything that's happening to them. They want it to come across as accurate as possible. And Shauna and Josh just maintain that it's whatever it is, it's organic. And
okay.
We actually had an incident that didn't make it into the documentary. I have it on camera, but just couldn't kind of fit it in editing-wise. But they saw this little creature inside of their home.
Really?
Like a sprite is the way Shauna described it. And they saw it darting around in their dining room area. And it was just like all black, almost like it was a tiny shadow person or something. Very odd.
Oh.
And they didn't get any, you know, quote unquote, evil intentions from it. It was just one of those jarring experiences. Like, whoa, what the hell's happening right now? And then it was kind of over, you know?
Well, you know, at KRI, we've debated what exactly is out there that's contacting us. Is it all just energy? Are they entities? Are they from certain planets? Do they have different lines of genetics? You know, I'm very curious about that. That is very ongoing. Some people think that it's just not so much genetic, but it's energy. Have you seen anything similar to what Shauna and Josh saw, that gray little entity in their bedroom?
It's not quite so much, but I mean, just with dealing, not so much even with my own story, but other people, it's very personal to where they are, what they have in their mind to pull out for stuff.
Yeah.
I know somebody who was abducted by Humpty Dumpty, for lack of a better term, because they were like five. They didn't know what they were seeing. They couldn't put anything to it, so they saw Humpty Dumpty. So that kind of plays into the whole puzzle as well.
That's what they said they saw. It looked like Humpty Dumpty.
And I in one of my books, I likened it to the movie Contact, where Jodie Foster, when the alien finally confronted her, it was in the form of her father, because it was something that she could be open to and familiar with and not be scared by.
Yep.
And so maybe some of that's happening, you know. And in one of my early experiences, I saw what, looking back on it now as an adult, I think was the first time I ever saw a UFO. But my mind tells me that it was a lightning bolt. Like, that's what I see hovering in the sky is a lightning bolt. Like, I still remember it that way. And maybe that was to make me not so scared. I was 4 years old and I didn't know what the hell to make of it, so I called it a lightning bolt. I don't know, but it's interesting though how there are parallels with people, you know,
and how they perceive things.
Similar experiences.
Well, let me see. When I was about 10 years old, I lived in East Kingston, right around the time of the UFO incident and so forth. I saw a green Michelin man figure in my bedroom floating in the doorway. And I had heard nothing about, everybody was talking about little green men, but what I saw was phosphorescent green. And I had no previous concept of something like this. So it wasn't just a flash of light. I saw an entity of some kind, and it paralyzed me, and then I fell back asleep. But since then, I've found half a dozen accounts of people who have seen the Michelin Man or Michelin Man-type entity, and they've been white, and they've also been, red. White, red, and green have been the reported colors, but the same sort of shape. They look like a Michelin Man suit.
How curious.
Yeah, kind of interesting. So I think part of it is we may see something as it shows itself to us, but also I think there's a matter of interpretation that goes on depending what our own experience is so far, that thus far in life.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, like the perception piece. In my latest book, Otherworldly Encounters, I have a whole section at the beginning of the book talking about perception and all these preconceived notions. And the term preconceived notions almost has a negative twist to it, but it's something you can't escape. It's subconscious. It's filtered through all of your experiences.
That's right.
And experiences of others, you know,
and
perception plays a whole huge part in how you experience something. I'll tell you a story. I was driving my roommate to work one morning a bunch of years ago, and I was convinced that there was a UFO hovering over my car as we were driving down the road. And then as I looked down the road, it looked like there were a fleet of UFOs coming at me. Well, it turns out it was just these new light posts that were installed. They're very high, and there was four lights on them. But for that 10, 15 seconds before I had that realization, my perception was that a UFO was hovering over my car.
Yeah.
What if I never saw the light post? It would be a UFO story instead of an IFO story, you know?
Well done. So, when are you going to be interviewing Mike again?
I think come August. We have the premiere on the big screen of Otherworldly and More down at the KRI
Consciousness
Studies.
Well,
and Mike and I are going to be meeting earlier to talk again.
Good. And I also hope that maybe you can visit his old stomping grounds and see if you can get any kind of feeling. That crazy place in Southampton.
Might we'll have to talk about that, buddy.
Yeah, not a problem.
Cool.
One other thing I wanted to bring up, Nomar, before we were... How much time do we have, Willie?
How much time do you want?
Well, a couple minutes.
I'll give you all the time you want.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Willie. Yeah. All right.
Well?
I was going to ask you, Nomar, out of your book, Otherworldly Encounters, I did want to bring up the Scarborough Drive-In incident that happened in 1975. Do you recall that one?
I do. I certainly do.
I mean, so many people saw that event. That was a mind blower.
Yeah. That was a story that was provided from Valerie Schultz. She is the
Maine
and New Hampshire State Director of MUFON.
Mm.
And her and I have worked pretty closely together over the last few years, and I attend some of her MUFON meetings. I am certainly not a member of MUFON, and Valerie is well aware of some of my apprehensions towards leadership in MUFON. But the work that the directors and the field investigators that MUFON has, they're all volunteer, and there's a lot of hard, good work going on. So that's why I feel comfortable working with Valerie. Anyways. Valerie provided this story where people sighted this UFO hovering very low over the ground at the cinemas in Scarborough. And at one point, it was passing right over the screen of the drive-in movie theater. And the witness was describing people running and screaming. I mean,
yeah, they were running out of the drive-in.
50s sci-fi movie, you know?
Yeah.
And this craft just kind of paid no mind to all these screaming people. And there were maybe about a handful or a dozen people that were actually calm and just watching it, you know, out of fascination. And they saw it travel and go, you know, travel past the screen and then go up the road and then finally went out of sight. But wow, what a thing.
That must have been amazing to witness.
You know?
Did Valerie also give you an idea of, didn't she mention that there had been some kind of military training going on the day before or something?
I'm not 100% on that. I don't have the book in front of me.
Oh, that's okay. But I believe so, in that they were wondering if perhaps there was some kind of connection.
Mm.
I don't know if there's a nuclear
I'm so sorry. There's
No, that's all right. That was off the cuff. Is there a nuclear facility up in that area that you know of, Nomar?
Yeah, way up north, like even more north than I am. I'm in Bangor, in about 3.5 hours north of me. So now you're getting close to Canada. Back in the 70s, there was an Air Force base. Actually, it closed in 1994, but it was Loring Air Force Base.
And
in the 70s, that base housed nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And they have had UFO encounters the entire time the base was open. When you talk to residents and former people that were stationed there, they all have a crazy story. Some of those stories have gained some national attention, so there are like a couple of specific stories that have been brought out. But if you were to go up there and just stop in at the gas station and ask just a random customer or the person behind the counter about UFOs, they're probably going to have a story.
Wow. I hope that you can get up there and investigate that one of these days. Although it's been a while, so
I did investigate it for my book, Otherworldly Encounters, and I went up there overnight, and I did
an investigation
of the base. And one of the first things I like to do if I'm going to do something like that and be on public property is I let the police know what I'm doing. So I stopped into the police station up there, and they're like, "Okay, weirdo, you know, go do your thing." So I had the whole base to myself. And I went there during the day to kind of, you know, get my bearings and to also just look around the base. And it's completely abandoned. I mean, I knew it was, but to get the scope of it, because it's massive, to get the scope of how big it is and how abandoned it is really weird. Around the peripheral of the base, there are some businesses. There's a call center and some stuff, but the base itself, there's absolutely nobody on it. So it was very weird to be there even during the day. But I decided to go there at night as well. Oh. And I wanted to get views of the night sky. And I ended up capturing a light in the sky at Loring Air Force Base, you know, some 40 years after one of their famous encounters. And I couldn't believe it. I don't know what to make of it. And that video can be seen on my YouTube channel, just the YouTube, you know, Nomar Slevic, Loring UFO, and it'll be probably the first video that comes up.
Oh, I'll have to check that out because that is very creepy. Something like out of a Stephen King movie, being up there on that deserted base.
Yeah, and it was being on the base. I definitely scared myself a bunch of times. You know, it's like 3 a.m. You're on this abandoned Air Force base in northern Maine. I don't know. It's weird, man.
You're very brave or crazy.
I'm sure crazy.
Probably a little bit of both. Well, we're looking forward to you coming up here to premiere your movie. When is that going to be?
That's going to be August 17th at 7 p.m., right, Mike?
Yep.
And that's going to be at the KRI Center in Stratton, New Hampshire. Yes, yes.
Yes, and I'll be there. Nomar will be there. I believe Sean and Josh will be there.
And, oh, great. I'd love to meet them.
Most likely Ken Owens from Abducted New England will probably be there as well. So.
And we'll be there.
And
I just confirmed just today that the narrator of Otherworldly and More will be there as well. So that's very cool.
Oh, yeah. He did a great job. In fact, I thought he was you. Your voices are very similar.
Hello, that's my buddy.
Yeah, you sound a lot. Do you come from the same town?
No, we don't.
Okay, because even your the lilt to his voice is very similar to yours, the modulation and so forth. You sound a lot alike. Sure. He did an excellent job. Everybody did an excellent job. I mean, Bill Brock's work, and then the music, and the way you put the film together, it's really, really, really enjoyable.
Well, I appreciate that because, you know, it took me like 10 months to edit it, which is ridiculous. That's not how long it should take you to edit things. But, you know, I wanted it to be right. And having Bill Brock's footage, like, it made the documentary, you know? Like, anything that's shot well that you look at in the documentary, Bill Brock did it. Anything that doesn't look well, I did it. So, he absolutely killed it. He donated an entire day of shooting. He let me direct him. And he was just the cinematographer, and he was there for me and Shauna and Josh, and it was amazing. So,
I can't wait to see it again. on the bigger screen.
The big screen.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be excited too.
Well, okay, Nomar, do you want to give us your website?
Yeah, sure. With social media these days and all the self-promotion and things that you can do on social media, I actually don't have a website. So you can check me out on Facebook, Nomar Slevic Author. On Facebook, send me a message, you know, tell me your stories or, you know, tell me I'm an idiot, whatever you want to do. Also, anytime I update, you know, a show appearance or if there's a lecture or if I'm just, you know, promoting something, it's going to be on there first.
Yeah, I saw your promo for tonight. That was very nice. Thank you for tonight's show.
And also,
shout out.
Also, outside of the premiere at the KRI Center, if people want to purchase, you can do that on Amazon, correct?
They can view it streaming-wise on Amazon Prime. Uh-huh. Just search for it by name, or you can search for it by my name, so Nomar Slevic or Otherworldly and More. I do have DVDs available, and that's on a web store, which is nomarslevic.com. Cartel, BIGCARTEL.com.
And what about your books, Nomar, for purchase?
Those books, anywhere you purchase books, you can find my books there. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all that good stuff.
So your book about Mike, that's going to be your third book, right?
Yep.
And have you got a working title yet?
Yeah, I think we have a working title. Right now I have it as The Granite Sky. And that's obviously in reference to a lot of the work that Mike does, and also New Hampshire and obviously extraterrestrials and all that good stuff. So we'll probably keep it, but we'll see.
Well, really quickly, Mike, why don't you just tell everybody what it is you do, just in case they haven't made the association?
Well, I run Granite Sky, which is support services for experiencers. It's personal support, it's outreach, it's public groups speaking. It's kind of all there. You can go to graniteSky.org and kind of get a better picture of it all.
All right. Great. Thank you.
And, of course, anybody who listens to the show has heard Mike here many times. He's a longtime friend of the show.
Absolutely.
And always nice to have him here.
KRI gang and Mike.
Well, speaking of the KRI gang and Nomar, I think a name this studio is going to know would be Valerie LaFosso is going to be coming up on Nomar's podcast for this season.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Fabulous. Right? I have to catch that,
too. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. Thanks for mentioning the podcast, Mike. So really quickly, my podcast, it's called I Want to Believe. And you can just search for it by name anywhere you get your podcast, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. But what me and my buddy do is that we record everything at once and then release everything at once, Netflix style. So it comes out every winter. So the next season, season three, comes out in winter of 2020. And that's the beginning of 2020, where it's still winter here in New
Maine.
England.
Yeah.
And right now I have 13 episodes written. I'm hoping to do 20 episodes. And then me and my buddy are going to record it all. I'll edit all. The whole process takes like 3 months. And then we'll release it early next year.
Great. Great. A lot of great projects. All right, then. Nomar, thank you so much for coming on. We look forward to seeing you very shortly on the 17th.
Yes, thank you, Nomar. And we will see you at the KRI Center.
Yes, as well as Mike. And thank you for coming on, Mike.
Thank you.
Your lovely faces. And thanks so much for having me on again. I appreciate it.
So much our pleasure. Thank you, Nomar. And Mike.
And Mike, that was a nice surprise. Thanks for coming on.
it was hard to keep it.
Yeah, we were trying to keep a secret. Yeah.
Well, you did good.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Nomar, and good night.
Take care, everybody. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Nomar. Hey, Mike, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mike.
Always a pleasure to have you here, too. Whoops. Goodbye. I guess that's the end of Spirit Radio.
Ran over a little, but yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, we're a little rusty, but hey. Yeah.
So let's see. Are we going to be here next week?
We're supposed to be, we're having Donna Hanley on. She's a psychic empath, and she's going to be speaking with us, and it will be a call-in show. So if you have any kind of questions about anybody, someone who's passed, please give us a call.
At 603-430-9722.
I was going to mention it for next week, but yeah, because nobody will remember the number, Willie.
Well, hey, I remembered it.
You're exceptional.
If I can remember, anybody can,
yeah.
Believe me.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and you all have a good night.
Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org.